This is Twit.
Nicole Lazzaro is, I'll say she's the founder and genius behind Zio Design. But really, when your mother asks you what you do, what do you tell her?
What do you do? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That is a good question. Well, essentially, I make games more fun. So,
I like that.
There you go.
And your mom goes, she does something with computers. that's what my mom. Something with computers.
Well, it's really, I do something with computers and how computers move us in interesting ways.
How do you get into something like that?
Well, I studied, psychology at Stanford, and I was really fascinated with, at Stanford, what I wanted to do is I wanted to have a double major in psychology and filmmaking. Because I really wanted to understand, why does the language of cinema work?
Did you want to be a filmmaker?
I wanted to be a filmmaker, and then I discovered this thing called a computer.
Yeah.
And so then I wanted to be an interactive filmmaker.
Ah.
And so I wanted to be able to go into these worlds and change things.
Isn't that what a game is, really, is an interactive film?
Yeah, and then games started to come out. So we had Adventure, and I played Adventure on lots, the low overhead time-sharing computer. It was all on, all keyboard only.
Colossal Cave, yet. Crowther and Woods.
Yeah.
The 350 or the 651 version. I loved Adventure. I played so much Adventure.
Exactly, yeah. It was a lot of fun. And then,
this is the one where you're standing at the end of a road. There's a dark woods. There's a house. And you
and then a lot of it was text.
It's all text. Go left, go right, go up, go down, throw axe.
Yeah, and there'd be a little maze drawn out with ASCII characters, and you're going after
The one with graphics. Oh, you had the fancy one.
Fancy, I don't know. But because it really captures your imagination.
It does, and it's so simple.
Yeah, it's so simple. And then later when I went into interactive media. Yeah. So CD-ROMs came out, Apple launched the Macs, and then CD-ROMs came out. And so I really love this idea of, what could we do? Could we create these stories?
This has been a real challenge, though, because storytelling normally is an arc. It's a beginning, a middle, and an end, a hero's journey. Yeah. You have to, and there's a very rigid almost structure to it.
Structure, right, yeah. And so you've got this, in the language of cinema and film, it's all about creating these emotional highs, following a linear path.
Three acts, yeah.
Right? Three-act structure. And then with games, interaction, you want to be have a lot of agency on the other axis, right?
Right. And agency is the enemy of storytelling,
you would think, right? Because you can't figure out, what is the ending? So we've been evolving, since those times. What is the language? What could we do where we mesh those things up? Yeah. And so those are the kinds of games experiences that I enjoy the most. So when I got the chance to work with, Robin and Rand Miller on Myst, the Myst.
You worked on Myst?
Yeah.
The original Myst?
I worked on, Myst 2, Myst 2, so Riven. And then I worked on Uru and on Myst 5.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Yeah, they're such geniuses. And it's you want to go to another world.
It was the original, it was a puzzle game, but it was a very vivid, for those who don't know, and there are probably people under a certain age who don't know what we're talking about. MYST, look it up, kids.
There is a version on the iPhone.
Is there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can actually play it on the iPhone, iPad. It's different.
But. So the idea was you're in a very immersive world, but it's not like a first-person shooter world that you're running through.
It was really the first game that really got me into another world, and I think that's why it was so popular.
Yeah.
Is that it was a vacation. When I played Myst for the first time, I did it in a weekend, and then I was driving back to work the next day, and coming out of Oakland on the going through the Oakland maze, and I went, I want to go back. I don't want to be in this city. I want to go back. And I went I'd been on vacation, and then I realized no, I had just been in Myst.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and so at that moment, that's when I decided I really want to do, my own experience. I really want to, learn how to make, these, interactive worlds where you feel a lot of agency and you feel a lot of emotion. And so that passion has really driven me, for my whole career to today, where we have, AR and VR, these mixed reality experiences.
So did you, somebody with that urge would start a game company and write a game.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do that or did...
Well, I wanted to do, basically, I thought I would learn on other people's nickel first.
Very smart.
And, we live in San Francisco, Bay Area, and we all know the original 49ers, who made the money was not the people, in the mines, the people who were selling the axes and the pixels.
Levi's.
The Levi's jeans and stuff like that. So I wanted to, so I did a consulting company first, and that's what Zio Design, you know, is, you know, continues
so
to be.
So you, it, but I bet you there was another motivation, not merely economic. Mm-hmm. And I think this is actually why I'm a journalist. Yeah. I didn't want to throw all my eggs in one basket. I wanted to sample every basket.
Exactly. Yeah. So we basically were, with this consulting structure, we were able to rotate out or rotate through, you know, 5 to 10 games, you know, in a single year.
Right? Yeah. Whereas if you were in one game, it'd be 3 years of development.
It would just be one shot, right?
Yeah.
And so we really wanted to study what creates engagement from multiple angles. And so then the next phase of the company was I went in and just took 2 years to actually do really deep research on emotion and what drives people, what drives players, what makes things.
This is your psychology.
This is the psychology, yes. So the psychology side, because I wanted a toolbox.
Had anybody studied this before?
Nobody had ever studied this before. What we had was the research that had been done for casinos, right? So you had Skinner boxes. You had, behaviorism, right? You had all that stuff.
That's the brutalist design of games. That's like,
I could see, all of my, game designer friends really, they love psychology. They want to know, how does the brain work? And that was the only tool that was available. But yet, I would turn around, I'd look at MIST, and I co-founded the Multimedia Studies program at San Francisco State.
Oh, neat.
Teaching there.
Very good, very famous program.
Yeah, yeah, it was the first one of its kind.
Yeah.
And so what I noticed that some games, some experiences, some non-games would actually be, people would do for hours. And then some would just do it once and they were gone. Right, they didn't want to come back to it. So that's what kind of lit the spark. Like, well, what is it? So I then looked at. I did 2 years, did a lot of secondary research in the literature, and then I did primary research where I had people play games, and I measured the emotions on their faces while they played. So at home, school, and work, young or old, everything from Halo to Bejeweled, from Tetris to Call of Duty. And I took those moments and I used Paul Ekman's facial action coding to slice up those moments and sort them by the emotions people were feeling.
So you videoed them.
Their faces, yeah. And there's something called micro expressions. And so you can see sort of like when you, one I like to use, when you smile or when you're in enjoyment. A lot of people think it's when you smile, which is contracting the zygomaticus here, so you get a smile. But that's actually not the best indicator, because you can smile, you can force a smile, you
can
smile.
We can all smile.
Right, yeah, smile for the camera.
It's not in the eyes, you're not smiling.
Right, and that's the eyes. So then what about the eyes, right? And it's these crow's feet here. It's the orbicularis oculi, the contraction of this muscle here that indicates true enjoyment. Some people can fake it, but a lot of people,
I'm good at faking it. Learned all about the cubulus zucoli.
Cubulus zucoli, the cauliflower or zucoli? No.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, and
would you like to do a functional MRI of people's brains?
I really want to do a functional MRI.
That's where you can do a magnetic resonance of brain activity, but you can actually do it while persons are doing something.
Are actually doing things. And that's the neat thing about games. And again, my psychology and gaming come together, is that if you have a game, and we saw this within MIST, people would, I think it was with Uru, when they brought back the classic MIST sound. For the books, people were like, oh, and then they describe this tingling feeling.
Yeah,
they had
I just
arm,
got it.
And then up the back of their head. And what's amazing about
I
that?
I just got it.
That's the
I'm
classic
getting it right
sign
now.
Of,
I remember that sound. Yeah.
And that's the classic feeling of wonder. That's actually the physical sensation of wonder. So the body is responding to something new, and it orients attention. And there's
Can
I could
you
write
make
a
game that does that?
That's why MIST was so popular. Because it creates, curiosity, wonder and surprise. And it's the exploration in MIST that works really well with creating those emotions. And then if you had a game that had a different mechanic, we noticed that created different set of emotions. So like a first-person shooter game.
Call of Duty does not give you a sense of wonder.
No, well, yeah, no, it doesn't. In a sense, if you think about the core loop anyway in Call of Duty, it puts, stuff flying at your face, at eye level. That creates fear. And
it's fight or flight, right?
It's fight or flight, and then that works really well with get the sniper, move on. Get the sniper, move on.
Yeah, because that's satisfying if you respond and you handle the stimulus.
Right, right.
That gives you a sense of satisfaction. Is that the motive? Is that the thing that's keeping you playing the game?
Yeah. So basically, you get into these loops, right? But what we noticed is that when we went in, is that it's that, but then even in Call of Duty or the big popular ones, and then eventually World of Warcraft, is that it wasn't just that hard fun. is like, you know, in between battles, or, you know, if you're going into, you know, you go over a hill and suddenly there was this great vista, or in Halo, right? There were these moons.
There
and
are
planets.
These wonderful moments. Yeah.
And so then we slipped back into what we call easy fun. So it's this exploration feeling. You get basically, you know, you think about like when you kill the boss monster, you know, you get like really, the game is very difficult. Mm-hmm. You feel like you win. You go, yes.
Success.
I got success. And then what the next thing the game designers do for popular games is they then put you into a new level, a new world, and there are no monsters, and then now you're all exploring again. And so there's a different, you go from that frustration to winning to now a different emotional state, which is, it goes back to easy fun. We were exploring curiosity, wonder, and surprise. You find a puzzle, you find a, you know, a potential enemy, and then you go back into hard fun. And so what happens is that we saw people looping between these different types of fun.